Mother Earth says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey, hey, yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. And Father Sky says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey, hey, yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. And all living creatures say, take good care of us. Please do not hurt us. Hey, hey, yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. And we are here to be ourselves, to be with one another, to be with our surroundings, to be. And we are here to take care of ourselves, to take care of one another, to take care of our surroundings, take care.
Greetings. You are listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yat-Kitishi Native American Center. We are broadcasting on RFPI, Radio for Peace International, Global Community Radio. Akwe, welcome. This is your host, Ones Pritzker. Wolf Mountain Radio focuses on protecting Mother Earth, defending Native lands and Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices presents the situations facing Native peoples throughout the world with Native news, interviews, music, commentaries, and investigative reports. This program serves to protect sacred Mother Earth and the traditional cultural lifeways of Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Please listen now to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. Ho, Kanawantakwasin, to all of our relations. CD entitled Sacred Flight. The name of that song was The Drum. The Eastern Eagle Singers are drummers from the Mi'kmaq Indian Brook First Nation in what is now called Nova Scotia, Canada. Mi'kmaqs are part of the Wabanaki Confederacy and so are considered my cousins. As most listeners to Wolf Mountain Radio know, the drum is a sacred instrument to many Native nations. We consider the drum as the heartbeat of our indigenous peoples and Mother Earth. Ashkwe, greetings and hello, everyone. Welcome to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. Today's broadcast is Program 3 of Wolf Mountain Radio's special series from Smart Means Story Youth, Strategy Organizing, Campaign Messaging, and Communications Training Conference I had the honor to attend. My guest today is Elise Hoag, who is here participating in a three-day youth activist training hosted by the organization Smart Meme. Elise is a member of Smart Meme's board, as well as an activist with the Rainforest Action Network, RAN. In today's program, we focus on a very special organization, Smart Meme, and its youth leadership program, STORY. Strategy, Training, and Organizing Resources for Youth. Yadkinishi Native Center is an intertribal, cultural, environmental, social justice, and news media organization is dedicated to promoting a global culture of peace, justice, and ecological health for all life. This vision is at the core of all of Yadkinishi Native Center's programs and projects. One major emphasis of our work is mentoring and encouraging youth, our future generation, to empower themselves to work for a better world. We do this by networking with various student and youth movements involved with cultural, social, racial, economic, environmental peace, justice, and anti-globalization issues. One example of Yadkinishi Native Center's support of youth is our journalism project, Communications for Community Activists, which trains young activists in messaging and media skills. Messaging, media, and campaign promotion skills are essential for getting one's voice heard. This is the case for many communities and concerns that have often been unnoticed in society or not reported on by the mainstream press. Communications is especially important when fighting for justice. As example, when government or industry actions threaten the well-being of a community and our Mother Earth. Another organization that shares this mission is Smart Mimi. Smart Mimi is a national holistic strategy project that links storytelling and social change to strengthen grassroots community groups. Smart Mimi, like Yad Kiddushi Native Center, believes in the power of organizing through the power of memes, which are ways of expression of a community's narrative. Narrative is another term for storytelling, a way of giving voice, a way of expression. Story is a lens through which we process information we encounter, cultural, emotional, experiential, political. It is the way a person or community can portray themselves or how others view them. Memes are bits of cultural information that tell our stories. They are a way of communicating a culture's history and wisdoms, current situations, and vision for the future. Depending on who tells or how a narrative is told, that story could unite or divide people, obscure certain issues, or spotlight others. A story can inform and enlighten, or it can also be used to deceive, mislead, cover up, or falsify the truth. Understanding communications, analyzing and examining messaging, which has so much influence in the state of the world, especially now in the information age of the 21st century, is a critical necessity if we are to create a global culture of peace and justice. A good example are the numerous public relations campaigns by business and industry that should really be called public deception campaigns. Smart Meme, like Yad Kiddushi Native Center, has supported a range of grassroots issues by providing strategy organizing to various activist groups around North America. Yad Kiddushi Native Center over the years has had the honor to partner with Smart Meme at several of these events. One very special gathering was Smart Meme's national training known as Insight Insight. Insight Insight was a 3-day training retreat focused on organizing, strategy, storytelling, and reflection. It was a space for youth to plan and strengthen their activism. I was invited to be one of several elders to share experience and promote intergenerational and cross-cultural learning. Smart Meme's 3-day insight storytelling, movement building, and creating a cultural strategy training was held in the traditional homeland of the Penacook Indian Nation in what is now present-day central and southern New Hampshire. This northeast woodland Merrimack River watershed is a beautiful area of forest, hills, lakes, and ponds, very similar to my neighboring Wabanaki tribal territory. The conference site, Owl's Nest Lodge on Bradley Lake, is in the shadow of Gawas-Iwajo, Windfall Mountain known as Mount Kearsarge. Gawas-Iwajo is a place I know well due to the nearby Mount Kearsarge Indian Museum, where for a time I often lecture to visitors on the cultural history of Northeast Woodland Indigenous peoples. Smart Mimi Strategy and Training Project was founded to support struggles for justice, peace, democracy, and an ecological future. Smart Mimi are people who believe in the power of ideas, the power of collective wisdom of communities, and the power of stories to change the world for the better. These are values and principles Yad Kiddushi Native Center believes in, and is why Yad Kiddushi Native Center is honored to network and support Smart Meme whenever we can. We urge all of our worldwide listeners to likewise appreciate and support Smart Meme. I would like to now welcome Elise Hogue to Wolf Mountain Radio. I mentioned earlier at the beginning of the program that Elise, in addition to being a member of Smart Memes Board, is also an activist with the Rain Forest Action Network, RAN. RAN has been involved in defending Mother Earth, human rights, sustainable economics, and energy and global warming issues since 1985. I first met RAN's founding president, Randy Hayes, at a 1982 international intertribal conference focusing on the role and impact multinational corporations have on native lands and indigenous communities. I wrote about that historic meeting in the national native newspaper, Akwesasne Notes. There was a co-sponsor of that historic gathering in what's now called Washington, D.C. I am proud to say that Yad Kedishin Native Center continues to network and support RAND's excellent campaigns. Their mission statement exemplifies the important vision we all must support. Quote, Rainforest Action Network campaigns for the forest, their inhabitants, and the natural systems that sustain life by transforming the global marketplace through education, grassroots organizing, and nonviolent direct action, unquote. I would like to mention that Elise and I share many of the same concerns, especially since both of us are professional forest ecologists. With that, Elise, welcome to Wolf Mountain Radio.
Thank you so much, Onus. My name is Elise Hoag, and I'm originally from the state of Texas, as I grew up, and I currently live in San Francisco. I am a forest ecologist who now works for an organization called Rainforest Action Network, as well as Smart Meme, and the role that I play now in social change is to speak to multinational corporations about their destructive behavior inside endangered forest ecosystems and on traditional land and try and leverage grassroots power to shift their behavior. As you said, I'm honored to sit with you as well as a fellow forest ecologist, and I'm honored to have your participation in this gathering because one of the ways that I derive my inspiration for the work that I do is to understand through ecology the web of life and how I fit into the web of life and really take a deep appreciation for every strand in that web. And I myself am a forest person, although I have equal respect for desert ecology and ocean ecology, but where I feel strongest and where I feel rich and lush and filled up so I can go back out and do my work is sitting in the middle of great forest ecosystems like we have here in New Hampshire, like we have the big trees out in California. So it's very exciting to sit with another ecologist.
Elise, one very important and special reason why I appreciate the Rainforest Action Network is RAND's focus on the global banking industry, focus on multinational corporations, sectors in agribusiness, energy and forestry, and RAND's focus on international financial institutions such as the World Bank, International Monetary Fund, and World Trade Organization. The Wall Street Journal has called RAND, quote, some of the most savvy environmental agitators in the business, unquote. Rainforest Action Network's market activism campaigns targeting corporations such as Boise Cascade, Weyerhaeuser, Citigroup, Goldman Sachs, and consumer boycotts against Home Depot as examples have helped protect forest ecosystems in many places. Global energy and environmental economics and commerce and natural resources is an area of study that not enough activist groups understand. I learned much about this when I worked with Greenpeace's campaign against the World Bank and International Monetary Fund. This was after spending 3 years in the U.S. Peace Corps Environment Program, personally seeing the U.S. Agency for International Development, the World Bank, and the United Nations Development Program, so-called development projects in Southeast Asia that actually destroyed natural ecosystems and displaced indigenous peoples. Like Rainforest Action Network, Yad Kedishin Native Center studies and monitors global energy, land use, and environmental economics as a necessary means to protect and defend Mother Earth and the well-being of all life. You mentioned in your self-introduction how you try to talk with business and industry in order to encourage them to have better corporate environmental and human rights practices. Would you please talk more about Rainforest Action Network and your work with RAND?
Sure. This year is actually our 20-year birthday, and that's very exciting for a small organization. We are a San Francisco-based organization. We have about 28 full-time staff members, and our organizational mission is to protect the world's remaining old-growth forests, support the rights of their traditional inhabitants, and also to support the web of life around them, because we have come to recognize that even if we never cut down another tree in a forest, the level of pollution that Mother Earth is being asked to sustain at this point would irrevocably affect those ecosystems anyway. So we really try and understand a couple of different things. One is that our strength doesn't only come from the 27 people in our office, but it comes from the relationships that we're able to build all around the world. That's why we're a network. We believe in the power of community and community voices. And the second is that as an organization that is seated in the belly of the beast of the so-called United States, that we have an opportunity to leverage that grassroots power against some of the largest, most impactful multinational corporations in the world. Corporations that are affecting people in our land here the same way they're affecting people, animals, ecosystems all around the world, because their impact is felt globally. They're some of the most powerful entities of our time. One of the things I learned recently is that of the 100 largest economies in the world, 51 of them are corporate, and only 49 are nation states. And that's a very interesting shift in the global power dynamic, that a shift that we're seeing played out where global trade agreements supersede national, federal, local, state law. So we really are dedicated to understanding that there is power there and power that needs to be undercut and shifted, because if it's allowed to run unchecked, we're going to pass the point of no return in terms of damage to our Mother Earth and the ecosystems that support us all. So right now we have three main initiatives. One is our longest, we call our Old Growth Campaign. The Old Growth Campaign focuses specifically on the logging sector and specifically on the largest U.S.-based logger, which is Weyerhaeuser. I'm sure many of your listeners will be familiar with that name. Yes. Weyerhaeuser is logging unsustainably and destructively in the U.S., in Canada, and we're working with some First Nations communities up in Canada on this campaign to actually expose the destructive practices of Weyerhaeuser and hold them accountable to the people that they're affecting, as well as recognize the ecosystems that they're operating in. The second campaign that we've been running is called the Global Finance Campaign, and this is a campaign that actually began about 6 years ago and sought to bring to light very destructive entity that was operating in the shadows, and that's the global financial sector, the private banks. For a long time, we've looked at the role of the World Bank and the IMF, but at the time that activists were having a little bit of success shifting those entities, what was happening is that the private banks, the Citigroups, the JP Morgan Chases, the Bank of Americas, were actually gaining more and more power, and in fact, in terms of absolute investments into these illicit operators, into the oil companies, into the mining companies, they were the ones that were profiting disproportionately. So 6 years ago, we began a campaign to expose these players and to force them to have accountability for where their profits were coming from, and to force them to make the tough decisions that we need to see in the 21st century to begin to chart the course towards sustainable economics, and a recognition that even the term economics is one of falsehood. It's one of mythology, that we can't separate economy from ecology, and actually they come from the same root. And therefore, since then, working with a number of activists all around the world, because certainly this sector's impact is felt very globally. So we've worked with people in Indonesia. We've had the honor of working with people in South Africa and Latin America, as well as here at home. We have seen the top three biggest banks in the United States make some very important concessions with regard to pulling investments out of endangered ecosystems, particularly forest areas, as well as recognizing stakeholders such as the traditional inhabitants in those lands that they had never even made part of the picture before. We're very excited about this work, and it's not enough. We recognize that as well. So The newest campaign that we're working on is called the Zero Emission Campaign. And what this was born out of was an understanding that Americans, particularly middle and upper class Americans, well, Americans in general, we have a system that's addicted to gas-guzzling vehicles. We have a system that's addicted to increased highways. And the result of that is not only the continued addiction to oil that's extracted from ecosystems all over the world, but as the United States economy, we put out 25% of the greenhouse gases that are felt globally. And of course, global climate destabilization is a universal threat. And one of the best ways that we can use our consumer power is to demand from the big automakers. It's important to know that our big three automakers are the worst in the world in terms of fuel efficiency, and that with a little bit of shifting towards technologies that already exist to use alternative fuels and fuel cell technology, we could reduce not only our need for oil, but the greenhouse gases that we're spewing into the atmosphere. So those are our three main campaigns, and we are really excited about the creativity that we've tapped with them, because we have wonderful groups that are working with us to think about how can we get at Ford Motor Company? What are the kinds of things that we can do in front of dealerships or as communities of faith or as student activists that will actually make what feel like monstrous entities listen to us?
CD produced by Soundings of the Planet Studio. This Anwar concert that featured various performers was to support the ancient native cultures and the unique fauna and flora tundra of the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. Both the indigenous peoples and Arctic ecosystem of Anwar have been and continue to be threatened by proposed energy development. This is a situation long reported on by Wolf Mountain Radio. The name of that song was Cry of the Forest by Lummi musician Chadas Kadum. I had the honor to co-host a workshop with Chadas Kadum in 1996 at the 26th annual NAAEE North American Association of Environmental Education Conference in what is now called Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. The theme of that NAAEE conference was Weaving Connections, Cultures, and Environment, focusing on the knowledge and wisdoms Indigenous peoples have to share about caring for Mother Earth, our environment. This, of course, is a primary purpose of Yaqutishi Native Center's projects and our Wolf Mountain Radio programs. This is your host and producer, Ones Pritzker. My guest today is Elise Hoag, a fellow forest ecologist and justice activist who, like myself, is participating in a national youth gathering hosted by MOTMEMA's a youth collective that assists grassroots community groups develop their organizing, campaign strategies, and communication skills. Elise, I want to return to the topic of the World Bank and IMF, since I know you and others at RAND also monitor the World Bank. The World Bank has a great deal of influence over so-called development, especially in policy sectors of agriculture, energy, forestry, and natural resources. I have fought against some of their planned projects in Southeast Asia, one being the hydropower Chico River Dam project that threatened the Kalinga Mountain tribal peoples I lived with in the 1970s in the Philippines. The scheme would have destroyed a large mountain forest ecosystem and forced the removal relocation of native Kalinga in order to provide more energy for mining, logging, and plantation agriculture, which was already threatening the survival of Kalinga villages. In the Philippines, Indonesia, Malaysia, and Thailand, I have seen firsthand major cultural and ecological impacts from World Bank projects, despite World Bank's published policy papers and their manual on environmental impact assessment requirements. Elise, what are your comments?
My opinion of the World Bank and their forestry sector policies, as well as the extractive industry reviews, insufficient, not enough, an attempt to satisfy what was an uprising around the world around their destructive practices, and made some steps forward, particularly in the late 80s. It was felt that there was some movement there. One of the issues that we're seeing there is that the World Bank and the IMF are increasingly becoming tools of multinational corporations rather than staying true to their mission of poverty alleviation, and that's tied up in the globalized economics that we see. So there's a whole cycle of destruction around debt and then privatization and resource extraction, particularly in countries of the global south. And I think that it's very, very, very important to stay focused on those entities. But I also think it's really important that we look at the whole system. And so what the Global Finance Campaign sought to do was bring another piece of the puzzle to the table. So we work closely with World Bank activists. And what we're increasingly seeing is that the financial institution, whether it's quote public or private, actually functions as one entity. And therefore, when we put pressure on one piece of the system, the whole system responds, not unlike an ecosystem. Actually, they are sort of a economized ecosystem. What I think happened is that the World Bank became vulnerable and there was increased pressure on it, and it moved a little bit, and then it got some mileage, some sort of, as you said, PR mileage out of that move, and that insulated it against further critique. And so even though it wasn't enough, we were forced to look at other points in the system that could take it to the next level, which I think that the private sector has taken it to the next level. Still not enough. So we need to find other points of intervention in that system to take it to the next level. The World Bank and the IMF and Citibank and all of these giant financial institutions are actually different faces of the same issue, which is an economic system that is completely incapable of taking the values that True Life is about into account. And therefore, it's entirely appropriate, based on one's own experience, to focus on one face of that system. And what we need to increasingly do is recognize that regardless of the face, it is the same being, and that the whole being has to shift.
Your remarks about the private sector and financial institutions, such as the World Bank and IMF, actually being part of a global economic system that is incapable of taking into account the value of life, a system that really has no concern for cultural, social, economic, environmental justice, is a very important point to remember. I think the United Nations World Summit on Sustainable Development in South Africa exemplified the expanding power of the private sector to the detriment of protecting Mother Earth, as well as disregard for the socioeconomic well-being of all peoples. Would you please comment further on relations with the private sector, corporate multinationals? Do you feel there is dialogue with business and industry towards real concern and real care for the planet's future?
We are definitely seeing dialogue. In fact, I'd like to make a distinction between dialogue, which is we'll talk to you so you'll go away, and negotiation, which is understanding from their perspective that they will negotiate only when they see a threat or evasive power to them. And so we spent years actually building up that base of power so that when we sat down at the table, we didn't end up with a dynamic that we call log and talk. So we're sitting there talking and talking and talking, and it all sounds very nice, and meanwhile, nothing is changing. So we are certainly in a position now where we're seeing some change take effect. And what's really gratifying for us is when we see that move from what, obviously, what the corporation is saying. So it's one thing for Citigroup to say, we now respect endangered forest ecosystems and we will, in fact, withdraw investments from logging companies who are either engaging in bad forest practices or in endangered ecosystems or treading on human rights, to actual action around that, where we can point to specific cases where we've worked with communities to bring the evidence to the table with the bank and it changed behavior. And one of the most recent examples of that is working with our brothers and sisters in Indonesia and Malaysia around a notoriously corrupt an abusive company by the name of Rimbunan Hijau. And by working with our comrades, we were able to build a case of evidence against Rimbunan Hijau that showed that not only are they breaking their own agreements around sustainable or legal logging in what we consider to be an endangered ecosystem, but they're in fact beating, intimidating, and in some cases allowing the murder, if not funding the murder, of activists who are confronting their practices on the ground in Malaysia and Papua New Guinea and Indonesia. And we were able to take that to Citigroup and say, you made these commitments in principle. Here's an example of where you are financially connected to this company in practice. And they have actually made decisions that have put very severe restrictions on Rimbunan Hijau in order to put the burden of proof on them and say, you need to come back to us and show us that this has changed, and we've asked for third-party monitoring and all of that. And if that does not happen within a specified time period, we will no longer be able to do business with you. It's a very incremental gain, and it took a lot of work, and sometimes that's really frustrating. And I think particularly when we talk about the global justice movement, which in the so-called United States is made up not entirely at all, but largely of middle class, largely white folks, although fortunately it is becoming more inclusive and expanding. But there's a real impatience around change. And so while I can look at that incremental gain, and I can measure it in two ways. I can say, well, they're the largest multinational institution in the world, and they should be doing more, which they should be. They should be applying these practices not just in Malaysia and PNG, not just with Rimbunan Hijau, but with Weyerhaeuser in Canada and with some of the logging companies down in Brazil as well, and they should be, and hopefully they will. But I can also, having worked with my brothers and sisters in Papua New Guinea and Malaysia, and having been educated by them about the reality of their daily life, have a whole different reaction
yes.
to that victory, which is one of hope and faith and relief that decades of struggle and pushing on different pieces of the puzzle will result in real relief
yes.
for people and ecosystems and animals and all of the beings that make up Mother Earth.
Guarded by soldiers and cops, so they can make all their plans and negotiations about how they're gonna stay at the top. And when they're done, they'll release a few statements about how their charity will feed the whole world, when all they really did was solidify their strategy to ravage us with exploitation and war. How can we be silent with so much at stake? Your rules were just made for the people to break. You make sure to dictate the entire world's fate. Lord, we are 6 billion and you are only 8. You say liberalized trade, yeah, it's been done before, so you can all profit off the blood of the poor. You say let market forces do that fine job. You won't take the blame for the billions you've robbed. G-A-I-M-F, W-T-O, F-T-A-A, NAFTA, World Bank, NGO. Clothing in acronyms, dress it up fine. It still ain't no more than the world's greatest crime. How can we be silent with so much at stake? The laws were just made for the people to break. You may try to dictate the entire world's fate, but we are 6 billion and you are only 8.
Yadkidichi Native Centers, Honoring Mother Earth and Indigenous Voices. Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices focuses on protecting Mother Earth and defending Native lands and Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices presents the situations facing Native peoples throughout the world with Native news, interviews, music, commentaries, and investigative reports. This program serves to protect sacred Mother Earth and the traditional cultural lifeways of indigenous peoples. We are broadcasting on Radio for Peace International. Radio for Peace is the voice of peace, promoter of the environment, champion of human rights, denouncer of hate and injustice, advocate of the oppressed, defender of truth. Radio for Peace International is global community radio.
The music you heard prior to our Yat Kitishi Native Center program identification was from singer-songwriter Ethan Miller and Kate Boverman off their Riot Folk CD entitled If All the Land Would Rise. The name of that song was Only Eight, referring to the original eight industrialized nations, now a group of very powerful 12-member countries that annually meet together over international finance and trade policy that in many ways dictate global economics. Elise, much of today's interview has focused on the important mission of the Rainforest Action Network, where you are a staff member. I'm glad we've talked a lot about RAN and the Forest Defense Movement, since both of us are part of that movement, being professional forest ecologists, as well as forest and wildlife activists, working with various groups and campaigns like Earth First and Indigenous Forest Communities, Cultural and Ecological Rights. In the time remaining, I want you to please talk about Smart Meme, the fine organization that is hosting this youth training here in the Penacook Indian homeland within the shadow of Gawasawajo, Mount Kearsarge. I feel honored to be a part of this gathering and honored to meet you. As a Smart Meme board member, would you please talk about Smart Meme's Story Project? Perhaps a little bit about the story curriculum, which is the basis of this youth training forum.
Thank you, and let me start by saying it is an honor for me as well to be here, because part of our mission recognizes that we as individuals and organizers are as enriched by bringing this group of folks together as anyone. So part of the reason that this organizing is about youth is because we believe that the youth can combine experience, if it's provided with them, with the fresh ideas and also the newfound ownership of the world, right? They are the ones who will stand to benefit or suffer from decisions that are made today. And therefore, they have a unique sense of diligence, one that I have had at different stages of my life, as I'm sure everyone has, including your listeners. So the curriculum, this particular curriculum, seeks to offer them different ways to understand the world around them and channel their ideas, enthusiasm, and dedication into specific points within the system. So let me start by saying we do look at a lot of advertising, and part of the reason that we do that is the youth today, some of their earliest input is through advertising. And regardless of what values their families are bringing them up with, we live in an information-saturated society, far more so than when I was a young person, and I'm 35, and certainly I hear from my parents and grandparents astronomically more than when they were young people. And we think that this is the trajectory of the future. And so one way to actually help them maintain their power is to help them understand that information around them and be able to deconstruct it for the hidden messages there. And so we look at advertising. We call it narrative power analysis, which basically says there's power in advertising, just like there's power in any kind of story, or else corporations wouldn't spend billions and billions of dollars a year. But there's power in shifting behavior on an individual level in advertising. One way to take back that power to the individual is to understand what advertising seeks to do and how it does it. So that's narrative power analysis. Another thing we do is understand story-based strategy. We are, unfortunately, many of us, particularly those who are assimilated into the dominant culture in the United States, we've lost the traditional storytellers that used to inform young people what was important in life, how to live, how to learn the lessons of the elders. We've lost that. what we have in its place is sort of a generic form of TV and popular culture that has very shallow messages that we feel like doesn't equip young people in isolation with what they need to tell their own stories. And so by breaking down what we have learned from those around us and those who have participated in the project into training how to tell a story, how to tell your own story. We started with what is our own stories and how do we learn how to tell that better, because we draw power from understanding our own stories. And then how do we tell stories as communities, stories that allow us to share perspective, to share values, because then we build power as a community that way. And then we take a step forward and say, so how do we tell our community stories to a globalized world that isn't used to listening to the stories of some of these voices? How do we use what we learn about storytelling to take our stories beyond our communities? And then what we sort of got to this afternoon in the session is there is, as we talked about earlier in the interview, this sort of globalized system that's out of control. Sometimes overwhelming to think about it. It sometimes feels so big and we feel so small and we feel like, how can we possibly affect change? But what we have learned collectively from the work before us and from our own work is that that system actually isn't as strong as it looks. That part of its strength comes from people feeling disempowered in the face of it, and part of the way to achieve power is telling our stories, but also to recognize where the system is naturally weak, where the system is sort of exposed for its weaknesses and its destructive power and its injustice. And that's where we can actually begin to plant the seeds for new stories. And that's what our curriculum is about. It's about learning to tell our stories, learning to tell stories as community, and then learning where to plant those stories in a system that's actually failing. It's failing. It's buckling under its own weight. And what we need to do is have planted new stories so that we can tell new futures and offer hope and faith to those coming up next.
Elise, I sincerely wish to thank you for sharing your thoughts on Wolf Mountain Radio, as well as your work with the Rainforest Action Network and Smart Meme. I always try to end an Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices interview by asking my guests if they have any last comments they wish to share with our worldwide listeners.
We are very proud of the work of Smart Meme, but our pride comes from the resonance that we have found with it. We actually don't believe that these ideas that we talk about under this organization are new ideas. In fact, we believe they are age-old ideas, ancient ideas, that we have gone through a process of rediscovery by listening more than talking. And that part of Smart Meme's mission is to listen and invite the voices of those who hold that ancient wisdom in and train new generations of activists. So the honor has been mine to sit and talk with you and your audience. The honor is mine that you have chosen to be a part of this gathering and offer your wisdom to myself and this group. So thank you very much.
Well, dear friends, we're nearing the end of our broadcast time together for this edition of Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. Please listen next time for Program 4 of Wolf Mountain Radio's Smart Meme Interview Series. Listeners are encouraged to learn more about the subjects discussed in today's program by visiting the websites of the Rainforest Action Network, RAN, and Smart Meme. The Rainforest Action Network website is www.ran.org. Smart Meme's website is www.smartmeme.com. Thank you for listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. We shall conclude with a song by Diné Navajo singer Louis Goni, off his Canyon Records CD, Sacred Mountains. The name of the song is Generations. This is your host and producer, Ernest Pritzker. Aho, Kinawantakrasin, to all of our relations.
Hey, I know, hey, Let's go on, we'll know, say so.